It's the Truepenny Show with your host, James Truepenny.
Hello and welcome to the Truepenny Show. My name is James Truepenny. This is my show, and today we are at Fighting Spirit Unleashed in the Walter Pyramid in Long Beach, California, USA, with an attendance of 3,007 people to watch the New Japan Fighting Spirit Unleashed show. And joining me to review the show today is Mr. Marcus Green of Del Wrestling Magazine. How are you doing, sir?
I'm good. Glad to be back talking about another New Japan show.
Yeah, this one's kind of a, well, glorified house show, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, this is kind of like an anomaly, because as Christy said, if you were listening to last week's show, Christy said they try and tell stories over a tour. As this wasn't a tour, it was kind of short on story, but there was long on good matches and some interesting and surprising stuff towards the end as well. But yeah, it was. What do you think? Well, you know, we've talked a little bit lately with you, Marcus, but where are your feelings on where New Japan's at now as we're coming out of G1? Going into King of Pro Wrestling on Monday, when this show goes out, it will be the time of King of Pro Wrestling. Where do you think the company's at?
I dig it. I think it's, you know, I think that, you know, the talent is always there, obviously. And then I think it's in a real interesting place, because it's not really predictable.
No, definitely not. Which is
that's always a good thing. You know, specifically one thing that happened on the show that we'll get into. But yeah, I think it's in a real interesting place, you know, in all facets, you know, from the junior heavyweight on up and stuff like that. So, like you said, it did kind of feel like a big house show. I think that the talent, energy, and everything that kind of in between kind of definitely carried it, because, you know, we had a lot of references to old feuds, a lot of previews to new ones. But, I think coming out of the G1, everything is kind of, you know, we're not necessarily taking too far of a leap from everything that happened in the G1. But at the same time, we're not stuck on, you know, the G1 at the same time. So I think it's real, real interesting.
Okay, then. Well, this show started with a dark match. Clark Connors defeated Alex Coughlin in 7 minutes and 33 seconds. And it was a genuine dark match. It wasn't on the show.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm guessing these two guys must have been from the New Japan Dojo in LA, which is nice to see their young boys are getting some exposure. You know, I've seen little bits of clips, and it seems to be an interesting learning environment with Scorpio Sky and, who's the other guy? I can't remember his name. The wrestler.
Scorpio Sky, Daniels and Cass.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember who the other guy is now. Oh, for crying out loud, massive name in New Japan, former NWA champion, left the company and fell out with Tanahashi and, oh, God. You know when you get one of those 9 mind blanks? I'll find out. I'll remember. Anyway, we'll move on to the first proper match, which was The Addiction, Christopher Daniels and Frankie Kazarian, showing their veteran tag team wiles against the up-and-coming team of Chase Owens and Hangman Page. 8 minutes and 14 seconds. Best Meltzer ever was the finisher for this particular match. What were your thoughts on this then, Marcus?
I dug it. I really like this. This was some good stuff. Specifically, anybody that's been listening for a long time know we big time guys that like to back, you know, Hangman Page and Chase on, specifically Chase.
Yes.
You know, sometimes he gets left in the background, but he always shows up and shows out when he gets the spotlight. So, you know, I thought it was a great contrast, just showing, you know, the new up and coming, the future, if you will, going against the established vets and them coming out the gate hot. But sometimes you just can't beat experience, and then that's what happened here. You know, they kind of rope-a-doped them, if you will. You know, they let them back them up against the corner, let them tie themselves out, and then they caught them slipping in the open, and they got the win. It was some good stuff. So, you know, Paige and Owens got a long way to go. Obviously, they two of the best young guys, but Kaz and Daniels having a bit of a resurgence as of late. So it was a real cool match.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I still love Chase Owens. Chase Owens was absolute magic in this match. Not to knock Hangman Page, who was fantastic as well, but Chase Owens is one of the best individual tag team wrestlers going in the world today. And he really hangs things together for whoever's with. When it's Kenny Omega, Kota Ibushi, or Hangman Page, he is the glue that holds the Bullet Club together when it comes to tag team wrestling.
Yep.
Right, moving on to as a 6-man match was next. Flip Gordon, Chris Sabin, and Jeff Cobb, the Ring of Honor television champion, defeated Chaos, Beretta, Chucky T, best friends, along with Hirooki Goto. 12 minutes and 4 seconds of a thoroughly entertaining match, as you'd probably expect when it involves best friends. Flip was flippy. Again, I still can't care less about him. But it's nice to Chris Sabin.
Yeah,
nice to see Chris Sabin on this card, though. It's good that he's getting some runs from New Japan from his Ring of Honor days. Jeff Cobb still looks mightily impressive, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, obviously.
Yeah. What did you think of this whole six-man here?
I dug it. The Beretta and Chuckie T continue to entertain, you know, with everything that they do from their, you know, the exchanges, you know, just character-wise and definitely physically. But, you know, for me, you know, coming out of this, obviously Jeff Cobb is on a bit of a tear right now. And for him to kind of run into my boy Goto, who is on a bit of, while the Cobb's on a tear, you know, Goto's kind of been getting torn up. So for Goto to kind of have a little bit of the, you know, piss and vinegar a little bit and kind of direct that towards Cobb, I thought that was really good because obviously they have history. Because in fact, last time they met, you know, Goto was successfully defending his championship. Now that's gone and Cobb's on the rise. So I thought that was, you know, great callback and just kind of see Goto, you know, emoting. Like he's not usually a guy that can, you know, be got to a lot of times. He kind of stays cool. Collected even in the midst of a bunch of L's he's taken, but right now he's just letting it be known, man. I lost my strap, and now this guy that I clearly can beat come up near kind of sporting gold. I think I could take off him, so I'm digging where this is going between the two of them.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if Hiroki Goto goes for a trip to the Northeast sometime around TV taping time, wouldn't it?
Yep.
Yeah, we shall see. Right then, next matchup was another six-man tag: Suzuki Gunn. Killer Elite Squad, even. By the way, I remembered Katsuyori Shibata is the guy that runs the New Japan Dojo.
There we go.
All right, got that right. Anyway, Suzuki Gunn, Davey Boy Smith Jr., Lance Sider, and Zack Sabre Jr. defeated Evil, Sanada, Ten Tetsuyu Naito in 9 minutes and 27 seconds. The ongoing Suzuki Gunn Los Ignorables de Japón feud, which was exceptionally good because you got two of the best tag teams in the business, two of the best singles wrestlers in the business, and Zack Sabre Jr. gets the pinfall over Evil with a European clutch, folding press, as we would say over here. 9 minutes and 27 seconds, and Zack is winding up Evil something chronic, isn't he?
I'm just waiting on the Evil is about to explode something like this. I feel like it's going to put the Hulk's tantrums to shame.
Well, I was going to say, as our good friend Simon Heath says, Zack Sabre Jr. has just got one of those faces you want to punch.
And Evil is selling it so well because it's like he's gonna end up snapping on one of his teammates, you know, any time now. And it's like, you know, it's real frustration because you legitimately have to try to figure out how to beat this guy when you know you can do it. It's like, okay, I'm not tapping out, but damn it, these pins. Now I got to deal with these pinning combinations. So
yeah,
you know, it's such an interesting puzzle to figure out. And because of Evil, I mean, you know, you're coming off of, you know, him and Sanada very much having, you know, successful tag running. Now this guy is adding him on the list almost like a hitman. And Evil is coming off of, you know, taking Okada to the limit in a sense, you know, for the heavyweight strap a while back.
Yeah,
it's just extremely frustrating, so I can only imagine, you know, what's going through Evil's mind. I wouldn't be surprised if he might, you know, almost get disqualified, you know, going against someone one good time. So
yeah. Davey Boy Lance and Zack as well, such a killer six-man team. They so work so well together.
and to be fair, they almost didn't need Zack. I mean, Archer and Davey Boy are a handful enough, like Lance by himself, but now you got Davey Boy, you know, just a technical arrogance that comes with him now. You know, he's going to stun on you, but he's going to make it look 100% flawless at the same time.
So. Of course, Davey Boy Smith Jr. last week on World of Sport Wrestling, which you may not have seen, Marcus, because you're not in Britain, of course, won the World of Sport Tag Team Championships with Grado.
Oh, that is hilarious. Just to see that interaction, because you know who's doing most of the talking.
Yeah. All of the talking. But yeah, I recommend you go find that match because it is just like I said, grayed out in Suzuki Gun. It works for me. Can't you see it, Marcus? Can't you see it?
Yeah, I can because it's Grado can these days make most anything work.
There you go. You see, it'd be absolutely awesome. Ghetto, just listen to me and it'll all be great. Trust me. Speaking of Gedo, he was in the next match tagging with his new charge, Jay White, and they defeated Hiroshi Tanahashi and Kushida in 8 minutes and 52 seconds. Jay White delivering Switchblade. Switchblade. That's his... no, it isn't. What's the name of his finisher? I'm having a real bad day today. Jay White.
Oh, yeah, no. You're 100% right. We're right on the money. Switchblade and Gedo versus Taguchi, Japan, and Tanahashi and Kushida.
I was thinking of Jay White's finisher, and I can't remember what it is.
The blade
it is
running.
Switchblade, because Slingblade is Tanahashi's rolling clothesline. Oh my god, I need some sleep, clearly.
Yeah.
Yes, I apologize. I'm sorry, folks. Normal service will resume shortly, apparently. So Gedo and Jay White defeated Hiroshi Tanahashi and Kushida in 8 minutes and 52 seconds. Thoroughly enjoyable matchup. And, well, actually, just Tanahashi looks so good and so up for it now, you know. I didn't really notice his injuries that much, but you do notice now because he looks so much more into everything he's doing compared to where he was like a year ago.
Yeah, I think he's always been good like that. Even when his last year with the blade in the shoulder situation and everything else, I would imagine that had to be going on. He's tough through. I mean, he's just that guy. They don't call him the ace, you know, for no reason. So. And, you know, I think officers always kind of fight through injuries some kind of way. The whole adage, I'm hurt, not injured, that whole deal.
Yeah.
And just, you know, riding the wave of momentum that he's been on, specifically coming off of that huge win against, you know, Okada. You know, he's on right now. Of course, you know, being up against somebody like Jay White, I feel like Jay White could get like a whole gang of those those British guards who aren't supposed to move. I feel like he could get a whole gang of them just chase him. Like, he's that guy. I can only imagine what's going through his head. Like, it kind of reminds me what's going on with Jay White and what was happening. And that was last year during the G1 when Okada was just getting killed by LIJ.
Yeah.
Constantly after every match. So, you know, feel bad, but I mean, you got the target on your back. I mean, you literally got the pavement, the red carpet kind of laid out, you know, that Jay White wants to walk all the way up to Wrestle Kingdom. Cause I think what he said after this match, they don't want to see a Gaijin in the main event. So I was like, oh, man, he got a point there. But, we don't want to see this Gaijin in the main event.
There was a lot of consultation before this card happened that, you know, there were, quote unquote, too many white people on this card. I disagree to an extent because I thought the match with the cards were absolutely fantastic, but I do agree that they sometimes don't have enough faith in their Japanese draws to pull the money in when they're in North America.
I would
say that. I mean, you know, you look at the main event. Out of the last four matches, there's only two Japanese guys from a Japanese wrestling company. Now, I admit, most of them went through the dojo system, but there's only two Japanese guys for New Japan Pro Wrestling in the last eight matches. Last four matches, I should say. Just a thought. Trust your draw a bit more, because they are very, very good, your guys. In fact, probably the best wrestlers in the world. So, actually, I'm just saying. Nothing bad, just pointing out that, you know, they should have a bit more faith in the guys that brought them to the dance, as they say. Anywho, killed the mood there a little bit.
Oh, no, it's a great point.
Yeah, moving on to the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship semi-final tournament match, which featured Marty Scurll versus Will Ospreay in 16 minutes and 38 seconds of, I'll be honest, Marty Scurll's best performance I've seen him in. And I've seen him wrestle live, and I've seen him wrestle on TV for many different companies, and this was as good as it gets from Marty Scurll. Scurll beats Ospreay. We've heard that before, but this time it was a bit different. What do you think of this, Marcus? Because this was incredibly good, and I think Scurll was shooting above his weight a lot of the time in this match. What did you think?
I mean, to say it was incredibly good. Again, you know, this is, again, another one of those matches. You know, we could talk about it all day, but you just got to go watch it. I mean, this was amazing. I mean, you know, like you said, I think Skull's best performance. So Skull has been on a roll for a while now. But you know, that whole death taxes and Skrull beats Ospreay thing, I just love that because it's just like perfectly encapsulates their rivalry.
It does.
Yeah, and their last match was a brutal classic in a sense. But coming off of that and this one, you really see that sense of urgency with Ospreay. Like, ain't no way in hell I'm finna go through what I went through in that last one. I'm coming out the gate smoking.
Yeah.
So, you know, to do what he did, and it really felt, you know, more even in that last match on both sides. And it was just phenomenal. Like, I got to go back and watch this match. Definitely my favorite of the night. I mean, and it had a lot of great elements throughout this show, but just specifically this match and kind of what this meant, because essentially this was going to end up, depending on how people feel, like kind of Ospreay always ends up back in a certain spot. It was going to be Ospreay going against Kushida, my boy Kushida again, and we kind of already seen that. So the you know, let Skrull get it in such a great way. And shout out to Skrull for mixing up his repertoire of offense as well when he needs to get big wins out. Just great. I mean, anybody that kind of, you know, may have a lack of believability in both, either of these guys should really go and check this match out. I think they'll be made to be at least somewhat believers by this performance.
We are, all three of us are former WrestleTalk TV employees, so we have to support him to an extent.
Absolutely.
But yeah, Marty was absolutely spot on in this match. It's the, like I said, it's the best thing I've seen him do for a long, long time. I was wondering if the stick he got from All In for that match over Running kind of affected the way he approached this match, to be honest. And he wanted it to be tight and he wanted it to be good, so he put in the extra effort. Because this was the next big match he's had on TV since then. Well, I say TV, it's obviously streaming services, but obviously this is going to be seen by a lot more people, even than All In. And I think this was probably kind of an interesting take on trying to put the extra effort in, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. He did get a lot of flack for that match. And I think, you know, if anything, you know, he kind of wanted the talking point to be coming out of that match, even though it went long and that may have had something to do with other stuff that went on the show. At least a talking point could have been, but dang, was it like a great match. And I don't think that was necessarily it. I think we kind of talked about it, you know, kind of felt went a little too long in certain spots. So definitely think that's a motivating factor. And getting back to that IWGP heavyweight, junior heavyweight status, specifically in the advent that's been left by the great Takahashi, which we can't wait to see you back. You know, I definitely think that's a huge point coming off of that show.
Yeah, of course, we don't know when Hiromu will be back, but obviously he's going to be the number one contender the moment he gets back. So, and we haven't seen Marty Skrull versus Hiromu. We have seen Marty Skrull versus Will Ospreay. We've seen him versus Kushida. So, Marty Skrull might be the way to go to create longer-term tension. All right, the next match was for the IWGP Tag Team Championship match, and the Gorillas of Destiny, Tama Tonga and Tangaloa, defeat Young Bucks, Matt Jackson and Nick Jackson. Matt goes into the rolling dropkick and doesn't get up right, and has a bad back, and that becomes the story of the match. As he tries to fight off injury all the way through the match. It's a story they have told all the way from Wrestle Kingdom to today, and it was absolutely brilliant. 19 minutes and 21 seconds, and that doesn't mean the Gorillas of Destiny were slouches by any means. This was their best performance since, what, 2 years ago? They were outstanding. They pulled the pin, and they were amazingly good. Marcus, what do you think of this matchup?
But I thought the Bucks didn't sell, James. You know, that long-running story.
They do sell. They sell better than anybody. It's just that no one's paying attention.
They're selling every sense of the word. Shout out to Pro Wrestling Team. I mean, it's again, this has kind of been the crawl in their great, meteoric, continued meteoric rise through, through tag team division. A minute that happened, because you're already going against the GOD. The hijinks is already going to be in, you know, like I said, the focus is a little bit more reined in because now, you know, actual titles is coming involved from the family of Tongans. But, you know, to have that, you know, happen with Matt, I mean, that literally killed their offense, you know, half of their offense, and Nick had to go and do his thing. We've seen that before happen. And it's great to see because, again, you get to realize these guys can hang on their own should they ever need to. But, you know, against maybe any other tag team, this might have worked. But against GOD, who was, like, violently coordinated, you know, and coming out with a flapjack gun stun, and then now you got a crazed Tama Tonga going full Orton on guys with that gun stun too. It's a wrap, man. It's a wrap. Like, I appreciated the effort by the Bucks. It was amazing. But the Guerrilla Destinies, man, they got a point to make, and they making it. And you know, I think looking at any tag team they go against, man, that back going forward is always going to be a thing. So they gonna have to come up with something else to kind of subvent that in the future. I think they can obviously do it, but right now all the momentum's in GOD. So great match, though. Great match.
He certainly brings things together as we get to the World Tag League later in the year. So not much of this year left, but December, World Tag League, Guerrilla Destinies are going to be in that tournament. Certainly Young Bucks are probably going to be in that tournament. I'm looking at probably Chase Owens and Hangman Page would make the most sense. I'm trying to think who else you would possibly be in that tournament.
Yeah, is it KES?
Yeah, KES, Best Friends, Addiction maybe, Yujiro with somebody who's hanging about somewhere. yeah, plenty of, you know. I'm trying to think of any more singles wrestlers in Yujiro and Cody. Possibly, no, Cody wouldn't do it. He's too busy. But NWA titles to defend and all that. Oh, yeah. We should move on to the next match, really, shouldn't we? Because the next match did involve Cody. He defeated Juice Robinson 16 minutes and 45 seconds for the United States Heavyweight Championship. I was kind of hoping Juice would sneak it or get a count-out victory or something along those lines, because I kind of want Juice to have more momentum, and this kind of like cuts his momentum after one unsuccessful defense. And it was the same with the Bucks, really, in the sense they have one unsuccessful defense, but they told the story better, whereas Cody just kind of beat Juice, and it was like, you know, I like Cody, don't get me wrong, not that much, but I do think, you know, I kind of wanted Juice to hold this a bit longer, just drop it at Wrestle Kingdom so he gets the big match, you know.
Same here.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously the possibility for him is to come back at Wrestle Kingdom, I suppose, but you can't make Wrestle Kingdom all rematches. It's got to have a bit more meaning and depth. So what were your thoughts on this one, Marcus?
I dug the match. I dug everything. You know, if somebody's talking to me about Cody and ask what's like one of the best things about him, and they never bring up Brandy, I'm gonna look at him stupid. absolutely.
Smart young woman who knows a place and knows exactly how to get the best out of everything.
Amen.
Yeah.
Amen. You know. Absolutely. But I mean, I'm a juice guy. I'm a big juice guy. Obviously, we know anybody that watch the G1, know the narrative that came with him, and know how important it was, you know, coming out of that, you know, for him to be a real fighting champion. Because you would imagine, I mean, Jesus, it's like, you know, looking at a convenience store during a state of emergency, you know, just lined up, you know what I'm saying? They'd be lined up for Juice's title, but that's kind of all done for now, because Cody kind of came in, you know, from a sense, kind of felt like out of nowhere, and kind of just kind of declared himself Juice is better, and then Juice has kind of had to step up to that challenge. So, I guess from a story perspective, it's benefiting Cody, because now this is the second time coming off of All In. This is the second time that he snuck away with a huge victory for a title. And throughout most of the matches, like, okay, like, how could he have even gotten away with the sneak away victory if not for Brandy?
Yeah, true.
So, so that narrative's going. But again, that's still continuing to spotlight on Cody, whereas Juice is like, you know, he's kind of seemingly hitting rock bottom again. So, you know, we're going to get another declaration if he can't get it back, he's done. Or if he, you know, is he going to put a timetable of, if I can't, you know, makes a significant series of wins or go for another title, I'm done. So, you know, we'll see it there. But I was talking to somebody else, and it was like, you know, they would have wished Juice won, but if he had to lose it to somebody, you know.
Yeah.
Cody's got a lot of momentum in his corner, you know, again, tied with that NWA thing and him getting back on top of the mountain, if you will. Because I felt like when he was Ring of Honor champion, I felt like that got cut short.
Yeah,
for a reason, and I really felt like there was so much more miles to go with that, but for whatever reason, it kind of cut him short. So I think this is kind of, in a way, pseudo making up for that.
I think as well, he was too new out of WWE to make that count. It was kind of like Flair's first NWA title run. You know, Jay Lethal and Dalton Castle made much better Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Champions than Cody did. And so did, you know, even Kyle O'Reilly and Adam Cole did. You know, they were Ring of Honor guys through and through. They put the time in. That's not to say that Cody isn't, but he hasn't. Yeah. He didn't have the same depth. This feels right. You know, winning the US title, he's been there a while. He's, you know, he's done the right things. It did look really cool to see the NWA Heavyweight Championship being worn to the ring by a Rhodes. You know, that was really, really cool on a big show in a big card in the US, as it should be. You know, this one feels like Flair's second run rather than his first run, where his second run was, you know, not that I was even like aware of it at the time. You know, you look back in history and you see the way Flair carries himself on his second run is much more confident. He is the man, you know. Whereas Cody, the first time round, it was good, but it wasn't as good as it could have been. Whereas this is looking like it could be as good as it needs to be to make the NWA more prestigious, to make the US Heavyweight Championship more prestigious. It looks good.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, real quick, it's not like it's going to be one of those situations where he lost to somebody like Jericho and we won't see it again until God knows. Justifiably, I mean, Jericho is literally a one-man rock star doing a million and two things. But, you know, it'll be like, oh, well, where has the IC strap gone?
Yeah, this is a bit different.
Yeah.
Okay, then. The main event of this particular event was a non-title match, but I will be damned if you can find me a tag match anywhere that was any better than this in the last 12 months. This was outstanding. The Golden Lovers, Kenny Omega and Kota Ibushi, defeated Chaos, Kazuchika Okada and Tomohiro Ishii in 23 minutes and 6 seconds. Golden Lovers are an awesome, awesome tag team, but Okada and Ishii are something very special as individual wrestlers, and the storyline is Omega doesn't like Okada, Ibushi can't stand Ishii, and the feeling is more than mutual, and they beat the hell out of each other for 23 minutes and 6 seconds, and you can't ask more than that. What did you think of this, Marcus?
Yeah, it's funny. You know, we go through this card, and a lot of people like probably agree that this was a tame show for New Japan. But you really appreciate everything that kind of came before us, because this is like a true climax to this show.
Yeah.
And you really look back and like, hey man, they really had some great matchups, you know, throughout this show that I could definitely watch, you know, again and again. And then you get to this, and you're like, yeah, this is an all-star match right here. So I definitely, you know, appreciate this card overall, just looking at this match. But yeah, I mean, exactly like you said, this is an all-star clash right here. And it's funny because I also feel like there's another small narrative going through New Japan where Okada coming off this title run, obviously he's still the guy. Like, he's still that guy, one of the top talents in the world, undeniably. But there's also this feeling, I think, amongst a few of his compatriots, like, you know, you done lost a bit of that swag, G.
Yeah.
And, you know, I kind of want you to have that back, and I'm kind of pissed off that you've kind of lost that, and you kind of freeballing it a little bit, like you need to find yourself. Like, no, the old guy was fine. He just didn't have a title anymore.
Yeah.
So, you know, I feel like that kind of tension from, like, Omega, Tanahashi. I just think Jay White hates people in general, so I don't know if I put him in that different category. But, yeah, I dig it. And Ibushi and Ishii, I love that rivalry because it's
man. Isn't it?
If you find two people that hit hard, I mean, obviously Suzuki is the reigning devil, but you know, these two guys have really made, you know, a rivalry for themselves. You know, we talking about Squirrel and Ospreay. You know, this rivalry is really, you know, shaping up to be something, you know, epic. I think, you know, once we get some more matches, but you know, even without a title, it's incredible. And the fact of the matter, because Ishii took the pin, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And just looking at the move they had to do to put him away, you know, I love how, you know, the New Japan always keeps Ishii strong. He is always going to be that wall that you're going to have to tear down brick by brick. You're not just go bulldoze through Ishii on any night.
No. This is proper long-term booking. Ishii loses, but he doesn't look weak in the process. You know, this is what you're supposed to do. This is how you make someone look strong, even though they have to lose every once in a while. You know, it was astounding. And I love the effort from all four guys. I love this match. Absolutely love this match. This is on my match of the year's list, definitely. Maybe not in the top two or three, but, you know, this was just outstanding.
It's funny. We talked about this. I mentioned about how Juice had so many potential guys looking to knock him off coming out of that G1.
Yeah.
Because, you know, New Japan actually books this stuff properly. You beat the champion, you get a shot. You know, there's no waiting for that. It's like it's clear logic and we go with that because it's, you know, it's just simple booking. But with Ibushi, there's like so many matches that he probably should be having that we like, okay, who in the hell's going to book another Ibushi Ishii match? An Ibushi Osprey match? And why in the hell haven't we got Ibushi and Omega? And it's kind of feel like they're aware of it, but they also know, you know, they kind of have to build to those situations. But at the same time, like, it's so easy to book right away because it's like, you know, the whole thing with Osprey, no-brainer. This whole thing with Ishii has to have another match. And Omega it's only a matter of time with Omega because it's like you can only, you know, put on matches saying you the man for so long before you actually have to face the man. And even though if the man is your man, you still have to face him.
Quite literally, your man.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the thing. At the end of this match, Okada and Ishii cleared the ring, but Omega, Ibushi, and the rest of the Bullet Club Elite had their celebration party, and Kenny Omega finally laid the challenge out to his partner, in many senses of the word, storyline-wise and whatever. Anyway, yeah, Omega put out the challenge to Ibushi that they should have the match that everybody wants. And then Cody came in down to ringside and kind of said, well, what about me? You know, I've won another championship and so on and so forth. And we're friends, right? And we're getting there, right? So Cody got put into the main event for a triple threat for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. And I was like, oh.
It was like oh, we God. Thought he was growing.
Yeah, it was just like,
yeah,
no.
When Omega won the strap, you finally got it. Like you, this is the one time you stepped out in front of your ego and didn't let it ruin the moment.
Yeah.
But then it's like it kind of reminds me of when you're a teenager and you start to kind of get in that rebellious stage and the elder just, you know, looks at you and chastises you and gives you that classic line, "Oh, you going to smelling yourself, huh?" you're starting to think your stuff don't stink, and Cody's getting back in that mind frame, obviously coming off of two huge wins, but it's like, all right, man, those wasn't exactly the biggest definitive wins I've ever seen. If we take Brandy out of the equation, you might just be left with that ROH ring. So let's just calm down. But you know, it's Cody, man. He's always gonna be this guy. This is who Cody is at the end of the day. You know, so you know, I wish Ibushi wouldn't have to get thrown in that in a triple threat situation, but sometimes that's the roll of the die. So.
Yeah, I mean, I like all these guys for different reasons. They can all do different things, and I think it's going to be interesting. But equally, I can't stand three-way matches, and just the idea was like, oh, it was just so disappointing. Yeah. It's like, oh, you're going to do that. Okay, then. I mean, it does hold off Ibushi versus Omega as a one-on-one for a while, and the stuff you can play with Cody and things like that. But it is just like, I just want a decent wrestling match. Just show me a decent wrestling match, please. It doesn't have to be like 30-minute slobber knocker with Tanahashi and Okada. Just defend the title up straight, and I'll be happy. That's all I
want. And it creates I guess a medium window of believability that Cody could again sneak away with a victory because obviously the odds are now more in his favor.
Yeah.
But at the same time, for me, even as good as Cody is, you know, I couldn't see myself being, you know, just over the moon at a Cody Tanahashi main event at Wrestle Kingdom.
Yeah.
Or potentially a main event between him and Jay White. Like I feel like, you know, those other main events are worthy. And for me, I don't feel like I could 100% believe that he could even beat Tanahashi. It's just, for me, it's just a different gear that, you know, Cody is not necessarily in yet.
No.
But, but hopefully we don't go that route. And, you know, we have a thing that, you know, he sneaks away with the win, gets the strap, and then that instantly creates beef between Cody and Omega. So,
yeah. I mean, which is, in Cody's defense, that is intentional. He's a gear behind because that gives him room to maneuver. You know, this is by design. And he does it very, very well. But equally, it just means for me, it's just like, I want the IWGP Heavyweight Championship should be defended in a singles match.
Yeah.
And no other way for me. That's just the way I am. That's why I like New Japan Pro Wrestling, because it doesn't do things like this. And I can understand why Kenny and Coachman want to change the rules and make it more interesting, more try and broaden the audience, but it is like, it sounds a bit gatekeeperish of me as well to say that, and I don't want to spoil anybody else's fun, but to me it's just like, I like New Japan because it's simple and because it's direct, and I don't want them to lose the focus on the core audience. And yes, and I guess there's probably 8 other matches that will carry that for me, and one main event won't kill me, but it is just like, yeah, just not interested. Yeah. Just absolutely, yeah. Like, and I very rarely am critical of New Japan Pro Wrestling because they book so well, but this is just something that does not interest me at all.
Yeah, absolutely. They can do it. I mean, we've seen, you know, the classic that we got, I forgot where it was, the for the IW Junior Heavyweight
one. Yeah, Kushida, Ospreay. The four-way at Wrestle Kingdom, yeah.
Yeah, that four-way was, you know, phenomenal, but they don't really do that, that often at all. So, you know, when they do it and, you know, you can get that level of talent, I think obviously you can pull that off, you know, and I think me, you, Alex, and a few others kind of got burnt out. What that was, last year's G1 or something on the tour with the way they kept rotating. What that was, the 6-man tag matches?
I know, it was the IWGP Heavyweight Tag Team Championship, because it was Gorillas of Destiny, War Machine, and KES. And they were having 3-way matches for the entire tour of like most of the Destruction Tour. And it was like, oh God. Not again.
Yeah, it was bad. We kept having to rank the matches. It was like, nah, they pretty much just doing the same thing over. And we could try to rank it, and the talent is there, but it's like, you know, it's kind of the revolving door. You always know who's coming through, and a lot of times you feel like. So, yeah, we'll see, though. Like you said, it creates a safe space that we don't necessarily get the Omega Ibushi match, which I guess for not a lot of people is, you know, the final thing, even looking past Tanahashi for a minute.
Yeah.
Like, this is where this ends up, you know, culminating fully when you look at, going back to that great video, it's like, what did you have to give up, Kenny? Like, everything. Mm. And then all that was left was Ibushi. So, you know, him kind of round about to get back to Ibushi 101, I think, would be just phenomenal storytelling, which New Japan does all the time, but we'll see.
Yeah, and of course, we have Kenny Omega also alluded to contracts running out, which are all due to run out in 2019. So we shall see what happens there. It would be interesting to see what happens around about January the 1st, that's when contract time is. I mean, the last time there was an interesting interview with Bad Luck Farley on New Japan Worlds or newjapanworld.com or the New Japan NJPW1972.com a couple of weeks ago, where he went through kind of like the period when AJ Styles and Carl Anderson and
Doc Gallows
left the company and Shinsuke Nakamura, and it was kind of like, you know, the rumors went round and everybody had a chat about it and they talked about it, and it happened on the day of Wrestle Kingdom when they handed in their notice, and then by New Year's Dash they were sorted out to go, and there was that house show on the New Beginnings tour where Shinsuke said goodbye and where Kenny defeated Shinsuke and so on and so forth. So, you know, that there's going to be some interesting news coming out of Tokyo round about January the 1st to January the 4th. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Nothing may happen. They may all re-sign for another year, and I don't see why they wouldn't, because they're making a ton of money and are home 6 months of the year.
Yeah, I mean, and they write their own tickets. Never sense of the word.
Yeah.
So I don't see why they wouldn't do it, but it's funny enough. It's just real funny just hearing about, you know, because that's the buzz around the industry. Everybody and their mom's talking about it, and, you know, obviously we keep getting quotes from them that, you know, obviously at first they're going to stay together no matter what, and then, you know, things kind of taper off, you know, depending on the interview in the week sometimes from these guys and what they say about it. But with that, it kind of just adds more fuel to Tama Tonga's flames, you know?
This is exactly it. This is why Firing Squad exists, because of this reason. You know, it's just like, those were the guys that started it all, and every time somebody signs with somebody else, they get a new leader who isn't necessarily the person they want to lead, you know?
Exactly.
And that storyline has come out of frustration based in reality, you know? Yeah. They were the ones that went through the hard miles. They were the ones that went through the dojo system. They've been there since day one. They learned all the things they could learn off Prince Devitt, learned all the things they could learn off Carl Anderson, learned all the things they could learn off AJ Styles, and they're still stuck in this position of, when is their time? And now is their time. So, you know, there, a lot of this is grooming for Firing Squad, and making them the biggest, baddest heels in the company is no bad thing, and it helps them, should anything go untoward, it gives feuds for Bullet Club Elite to deal with. There's plenty of stuff you can do with that. But it is just like, it's all based in reality. You know, this isn't like a shoot style interview or anything like this. This is all based on genuine frustrations, which makes the best storyline. Personal issues make money, as Jerry Jarrett said often and long, and he made much more money than a lot of other people did in the pro wrestling industry.
Amen.
Indeed. Well, that brings us to the end of our show today. I would like to thank Mr. Marcus Green of Total Wrestling Magazine and Baton Rouge, Louisiana, for your time today, sir.
Well, thank you. I'm glad I was able to do it. I always have fun doing these shows with you, man.
That's all right. You can find him at Paradox Kid on Twitter. You can find me at Sheriff Lone Star on Twitter. You can find Total Wrestling, where both of us write for that particular magazine, at T Wrestling Mag on Twitter as well. You can go check out their podcast. It's very cool. Mike and Tony this week, should be interesting to see what they come up with. You can also find us on The Troopany Show at on Facebook, and you can find us on Patreon as well, where you can keep The Troopany Show free forever for everyone. If you'd like to sponsor us, please email me at thetroopanyshow@gmail.com. Thank you very much for listening this week. Take care, and we will speak to you soon, because next week is King of Pro Wrestling, and we'll see what happens there. Take care, and bye for now. ¶¶